So we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. How are you doing? What is the crack with you? We have a deadly interview today. I got the opportunity to interview boxing coach Pete Taylor, father of Katie Taylor. I was trying to get this interview for a while now, but he was busy over the Christmas and all that. But we eventually got to sit down. We got to do it up in Coliseum Gym. Cracking interview. Really, really brilliant. I was taken back by him, you know. I know the stuff on the social media, he got shot and all that kind of stuff, you know. But I got to talk to him on a human level, you know, take away all that media bullshit, if you believe all that. And he's just a decent dude. Loves the sport, loves boxing, loves coaching. Really interested in developing people, you know. And I got a great insight to him. You know, I followed his work over the last few years. You know, but the interview wasn't about Katie. You know, I didn't want to know about that. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. There's a lot of that wrote in the paper. There's lots on Katie. There's lots on his relationship, blah, blah, blah. I really wanted to sit down with him as a coach because he has coached the greatest athlete the Ireland has ever produced in Katie Taylor. Yeah, it was his daughter, but she was an athlete and he was at the forefront of that. You know, he has one of the biggest boxing stables in Europe at the moment. So I wanted to get to know the stuff that he does, you know, what he does as a coach, what's his philosophy, you know, the training he takes part in himself, his learning, his insights. So yeah, it was a cracking interview. I left with loads of little gems, you know, just to have that experience sitting down with someone like that. Loads of little gold nuggets were in the interview. So hopefully you enjoy it. Even not if you're not a boxing fan, there's lots to take away from this inspirational ways. You know, these things that people talk about, whether they're boxers or footballers or high achievers in a professional capacity, they all have the same common traits. And he talks about that. So check out the interview and you'll pick up some of that. As always, I'll thank Noel Riley from Rooney Media Graphics, Andy from Liberty's Photo.ie, the girls from Shannon's Hope Line, Mental Health Warriors. Check us out on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. We're trying to build our subscribers. Go and check us out. Like and share our work. We're on Spotify, iTunes. We're across all the podcast servers. So that leaves me just to say, thanks very much for following us. If you like our works, please share it with your family and friends. Stories that have the power to inspire. So we need you to spread the love and share this inspiration. And if you have any stories that you'd like us to cover, any amazing people in your family or work, let us know. We're always dying to talk to people. As always, mind your little self. Take care of you. Bye-bye. Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. On the show today, I'm absolutely buzzing. Pete Taylor. Pete, what's the crack?
How you doing?
Guys, I've asked Pete to come on Pete Taylor to come on the show today because Pete is an elite boxing coach, trainer of Katie Taylor, where he's got one of the biggest camps in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, we've 14 pros here at the moment. Look here, going for a world title in the 30th of January in Miami against Andrada. Got a qualifying for an Irish title against Geoffrey Patrick. Local derby is going to be a great fight. And Davey Oliver, European title fight against the Yaskins. And then off Tony McGlynn, Sam Carroll, and Seneca all fighting in the Ulster Hall the same night, unfortunately. So five lads on the same night, two different halls, but we shall get it all soon.
So if anybody has any helicopters that they want to give you a lend of.
And of course you don't know, it's only 10 minutes between the two venues. So one's in the Devonish, one's in the Old South, so it's not too bad.
Danny, we're in here in your little office there, Slimline Transformation, Body Transformation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we do a 3D scan of everybody, just the body fats, and we give people a personalised training programme, diet plan, similar to what their fighters get making weight. So there's no one in better shape than boxers. So we give them a set kind of a program. You get a 3D picture of yourself, which is a bit shocking sometimes, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But it's a wake up call for people as well, you know. So I think we're the only 3D scanner in the country at the moment. So it's a great piece of machinery.
Yeah, I have a love for my background with sports science. So when I come in here, I was like, Jesus Christ, that looks like a deadly toy to be playing around with.
Yeah. Yeah, we use that in the body metrics there. It's an ultrasound as well, test your hydration and your body fats as well. So there's two systems in the world of people, so it's great.
Dudley, I know your background from boxing, Ken from Leeds, you're a Leeds man. Are you a Leeds supporter of football?
I am, unfortunately. I'm doing okay this year, but
You need a striker, my dad said to me.
I don't watch much football now anymore. No. But
who were your inspirations growing up in boxing, coaching? What were your drives and passions for them?
Boxing, as I always say, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, kind of a supporter. I love the two of them, one of Southpaw, one Orthodox, and I just always loved boxing. I was very interested in it, you know, and there's a good club in the UK, in the White Rose Boxing Club, Whitefield, and a good club, a lot of champions over there.
Cool.
So, I just came over there when I finished boxing. Just decided to, have a go at coaching myself, and then went away. Katie's only a young one, and so I used to go away a lot to their foreign training camps, the likes of Russia, Ukraine, Norway, and I was going around scouting, looking at what all the other coaches were doing. And you think they're bits up from everybody. And you had the older bits to it then as well, you know, so I've got huge interest in that end of it, you know, and again, it's sports science as well.
What is your philosophy as a coach?
I think my philosophy, I'm trying to get the best out of everybody I can. You know, there's some people, there's some ultra talented people who don't work hard, and there's some people who've not got the greatest talent and work hard. And my philosophy is just, I just want to try getting the best I can out of everybody. And treat everybody the same, no matter if most people give me 100%, I give them 100% back.
Yeah, brilliant. What lessons in life or training and boxing do you look back on now that have been one of your greatest teachers? I used to say failures, but I don't like using anymore. A friend of mine is a neuro-linguistic programmer, yeah, and failure, I don't use that word anymore. If you want to say failures or mistakes,
I think more, you learn more from your losses. You learn more from your bosses about the losses, about how they come back. You know, you see some lads, even if you get bad decisions, how they react to it, you know, and I think losses is you learn more from the losses than you do from wins, you know. Wins mask everything. You know, some one lad wins, and you kind of ignore the things he didn't do well in, but just because of the win. But when he loses, it opens your eyes up to a lot of things. And remember, how Katie, going back to Katie, but how she won the Olympic Games. We went over to Czech Republic, and she fought Sofia Chigava, who she fought in the Olympic final. And it was a horrific decision against that. But I only had a plan A in that fight. And plan A was working, but the judges weren't helping us, you know. And it changes your whole outlook on things, and it changed the way we planned for Katie's fight in the final of the Olympic final. And if it wasn't for that loss, the Olympic final could have been different, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think you learn a lot more from
the
losses.
Yeah, like, you know, it's an old cliche, out of the dark grows the light. But if you're in the light all the time, you'll never see your imperfections, you never see the areas that need to grow.
Yeah, that's right, and the losses thing excuse upon it, takes your head out of your ass at the time. You know,
absolutely.
You can't keep winning. The same as with professional boxers, you get these lads, they get fed journeymen, and then once there's a challenge, they don't know what's happened to them, you know.
So that's
a little problem with professional boxing. You know, you've got to build your record, and you've got to kind of step at your journeyman all the time, you know, to learn from them, you know.
Yeah. I absolutely love spending time, whether interviewing people like you, for boxing. I love boxing. What is it about the mentality of kids? I've done a bit of coaching, football, GA, but there's something special about boxing, or coaching boxing kids. Why is that? What's the magic?
I think that the kids are getting involved in boxing. It's one-on-one. It's noble, isn't it? You know, when you play soccer, you can blame 10 other people on the pitch. Boxing's noble, and at the end of the day, it's one against one. There's no cowards in boxing, you know. To get into the ring, you've got to be brave for stepping there. And you see some lads that they're not the most talented boxer. It takes a lot more guts from them lads getting into the ring boxing than a lad that's super talented. The super talented lad is full of his own confidence. These lads are, they're not the best talent, but they keep getting in time and time. and they get loss after loss, and eventually the lads do rise to the top. You've got to admire them lads.
I take my hat off. Anyone tells me doing a white collar box and they're amateur, they're pros, they're just sparring in the gym, I'm like, fair fucking play to you. It's deadly.
But you know, sparring in the gym, you get some lads that are great at sparring in the gym, but it's an extra little bit of courage to stand in front of everybody and getting an actual fight.
Because you get up on the stage.
Even sparring, nobody wins.
Mm.
But you know, nobody wins. There's no decision at the end of the sparring, but when you get in there and actually boxing, there's a decision at the end of it, and the ego has to go all the way to the end, you know. So,
absolutely.
The step forward is the actual competing.
Like, I mean, my greatest admiration for boxers is the commitment, is the sacrifice, and it's a very lonely, lonely sport, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lonely. Like, look, you can have a great day of boxing, but it's still painful. You know what I mean? Because you're still getting punched in the face.
Psychological, emotional, psychosocial,
You know, you look at all these other sports, say running, athletics, great sports, and I'm not the meaning of it.
Yeah.
You come second. No big deal, but even if you win in boxing, it's still painful. And if you come second in boxing, it's extra painful, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, people think, it's a great life, boxers have a great life. So you're waking up every day. Every day you're some kind of conflict. You're getting hit every day, you know. It's a tough spot, and the girls is taking up the spot. I think it's great, you know, because like every day, you know, they're going in there, they're getting punched in the face, and and there's not enough girls in the country boxing, so they have to spar boys. Once everyone puts a girl, they're all the same, you know, boys start sparring girls the same all day. They spar each other, you know.
100%. I seen a great tweet from, I think it was Roberto Duran. He says, I think professional boxers should go around to people in supermarkets and start booing them.
Yeah.
I was like, that's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Who boos somebody? Imagine them booing like a professional athlete.
And everybody, you see these armchair viewers, and they're sitting there, and they're coming, I beat that lad, at least, right? I've never been in a ring in my life. That was a shit fight. Some of the fights that look boring to people are great fights for the purists, you know.
Yeah.
All the little feints going on and everything, you know, but it does be annoying listening to some people, you know, these armchair viewers.
Like the Anthony Joshua and your man Andrew Weiss fight, people slated that.
He did what he had to do. Joshua did what he had to do. Ruiz didn't do what he had to do, and that was the difference, you know. He's not going to stand and fight Ruiz. We wanted to make the fight as easy as possible, and at the end of the day, he's world champion now. Nobody remembers the fight, he's world champion.
Yeah, exactly.
At the end, who cares, you know? And who thought at the end of the day, you've got to take that out for Joshua. Who thought he could move for 12 rounds, the size of him? Everyone thought he'd gas after 6 rounds. He didn't gas. He got his plan perfect.
But it's crazy that people would even criticise that, and as you just said earlier, that wouldn't even get in the ring. Get in the ring, they wouldn't even stand up for a presentation in their job, they wouldn't public speak. But yet they'd have the balls to actually criticise somebody that goes in the ring, and it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. I can't, you know, sometimes I don't understand boxers criticising other boxers. I can't understand boxers criticising Joshua. He was a perfect man.
Yeah, and that's what all it is.
That's what it's down on plans at the end of the day.
And people forget it's a business.
It's a business at the end of the day, and it's about winning.
Yeah.
It's actually about winning. You know what I mean? If you've got to win, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to use the right tactics, and it takes discipline. It took discipline from Joshua to get through with that tactics as well, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing performance, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was excellent. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. It's business. You don't forget that at the end of the day. I know people say, it's love. Like United, Liverpool, all of you. It's in a fucking business.
Sure. You're talking about football. Look at Arsenal. Look at the most prominent team at one stage playing the offside trap. They should have won trophies doing that. All everybody remembers now is Arsenal won this league and this trophy, what, 19, whatever they won it at. And they don't remember the performances.
Floyd Mayweather.
Brilliant. Like, you can't say he's boring, he's absolutely brilliant to watch.
Yeah.
You know, clever, you know, undefeated.
Business and clever.
Made the most money from any sportsman ever.
And he doesn't, I don't think he has too much residual injuries, no. You know, deficits from boxing, does he?
No, not at all. You know, he's still able to talk. He's clever, intelligent man. You know, he's not punch drunk. He's not slurring his words.
Fantastic. Not getting too much into the whole Katie Taylor thing. What could you give us an insight to what it was like coaching, I believe, the greatest athlete that this country has produced? What was it like, you know, going through that period with her?
Kay was the easiest person in the world to coach. We lived together, but I never took Kay to train day. She drove down to the club before, and she was so around herself because she had to want to train, you know. But Katie, if she was on her deathbed, she'd turn up training. You had to pull her back the reins. Look at now, living in the States, moving over to Connecticut and training, moving out by yourself and living on by yourself and training over there. Some commitment. And she was super talented at all sports, but she's super dedication, you know what I mean? And she set a bar for me as a coach, you know what I mean? And I expect all the lads to be at that bar, and it's hard for them, you know, so I put so much pressure on them, you know, they should be late for training. What are you late for training for? I'm here on time, you should be here on time.
That's a golden rule. You don't be late. They're the basics.
Basics, you know. It's disrespectful, you know. And you know, she set the bar for everyone at the end of the day. And, you know, you still again get these people criticism. You know, it's a female boxer. You know, Kate sparred, always sparred. Many of us look at YouTube and sparring the lads.
Paddy Barnes,
Michael Connor, Carl Frampton. They all used to come down to us in Bray for the spars because we were using Katie's hand speed, you know.
Really?
Katie went for the first world title in India. No fairness to Carl Frampton. Absolute gentleman. He used to come down on the train from Belfast just for the spars session and get the train on. Michael Connell was the same. They all used to come down for the spars in Bray and looked after Katie, accommodated Katie greatly, you know.
That's what we're tapping into, the commitment, that drive, yeah. Turning up early, passion, love of the sport. Yeah. You can't buy that.
You can't buy it. Like you're saying, Kay actually loves boxing, you know, and people say, I even said it myself that maybe she should retire, but she loves it.
Yeah, I heard you saying that a while ago. Yeah. That was probably as a father, was it?
I said, father, I said it after the Olympic Games in London. I said, are you okay, retires now? We were on RTE, we said it at the time of that. He said, I'm not retiring. And so obviously that was all decision. And after each fight, I think, I hope she retires. But she's loving it. That's my wish as a father. But she loves it, you know. So, you know, and as long as she doesn't get hurt and she stays healthy, that's the main thing. And as long as she keeps enjoying it, Kay loves training. She actually loves training.
Like, amazing boxer, amazing athlete, has all the qualities of a superstar. And you as a coach, do you think coaches get enough credit? I believe they don't. I just think there's,
yeah,
because you wear so many different hats. Coach, yeah. Psychologist, father figure, mentor, friend.
Yeah, I think as well, I think every coach has something, you know. Every coach has something, you know. There's no bad coaches out there. Because if he's turning up every day, he's a good coach. Do you know what I mean? Because it's his time. Every coach has something. And you see some of that coaches not rated really high. So that was a crap coach. He has something because he makes his boxers winning with him. You know what I mean? And he's turning up and he has... Coaching's about relationships between the boxing. It's not so much your knowledge about boxing. Your knowledge, obviously, is important. You need to know more than your boxing knowledge. But it's more about relationships. Building that relationship, it's a relationship of trust. They've got to trust you. If you say to them, you've got to do a forward roll in there, they've got to believe doing the forward roll is the right thing. Do you know what I mean? You know, whatever you tell them, they've got to believe 100% that's the right thing to do. Especially in fights when you're giving them tactics or you're telling them what push to throw, they've got to believe in it. You know what I mean? They've got to believe in you. You know, that's the most important thing as a coach, is that their belief in you.
Because sometimes I see the likes of, like Anthony Joshua, you know, his coach got slated after the loss, but yet when he win, they're the greatest and they're the worst. And I think that's the same as athletes. But I believe that the coaches don't possibly get the credit that they deserve sometimes, you know?
Yeah, no, and then you've got some of the boxers as well who, like, say, terrible, I said, what Golovkin did with his coach, who stretched him up to the heights he did, and then he messed a big, big deal. Then he cuts him, he drops him because he wants the coach he gets.
Sanchez, isn't it?
He's had it when he had nothing up to now, he's had him in his house, and then somebody drops him like that. Now, trainers, coaches are the only people who don't have a contract for the boxer. You know, the management has a contract, the promoter has a contract. The coaches never have, very few coaches have contracts. No. It's just an answer, you know. So it's, yeah. But probably, I don't think they get the respect, probably don't get the respect that they do, they deserve, you know.
Yeah, I definitely
think coaches so. Are there for every session, you know, they're there 100% of the time, you know.
Yeah.
Probably don't get the respect that they deserve.
I was talking to Steve Orman just there last week, we done an interview on him, the same. He was singing the praise, he was singing your praise actually as well, saying how good you are to him as a coach now. But the kids going through, you know, community centres, amateur coaching, they don't get the credit they deserve in society, should they, in fairness?
No.
They've saved people's lives.
Yeah.
Just look, like you didn't break.
Yeah, kids. Amateur coaches not getting paid, like my Great Boxing Club, which I will be getting back shortly. So
yeah.
But you've got so many kids that come through. And I see even now still get so many letters from kids who are now adults and thanking them for the time when they were going through a few drugs things as well. And you know, boxing clubs accept everybody. There's no prejudice in boxing clubs, you know what I mean? You get some, you know, the upper class sports, I call them, and they're very prejudiced when you take in. Boxing clubs let everybody in. They're like, I suppose they're like churches, aren't they? You don't ask, ask them the background or anything, you just accept them in, and they give you 100% and you give them 100% back. And you know, boxing is socially it's the best thing in the world. The amateur coaches should get paid from communities, from the amount of work they do.
100%. And I have to say, I've been around a lot of clubs, I've done refereeing, I've done coaching, I've had lovely experiences, whether it be in any disc boxing club, I've been to White Church, Dunor, Rialto, a few different clubs, lovely experience, lovely people. And I was refereeing FAI soccer, and the abuse I used to get when I'd be out in clubs, and even when I was managing, coaching, such a difference, you know. I could treat with nothing but respect and kindness when I went to boxing clubs.
Yeah, for sure. Look at all these international, these lads that we've got, and they're going away, say, winning the internationals, Europeans, and they're on the high performance team now. And all the high performance coaches get all the credit for these lads, but them lads have got to the high performance through the amateur clubs, and the amateur coaches don't get any credit for it. But they've given that, like the international team, these diamonds, and all the international team have to polish it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a great show.
You know, I think them coaches, they should be going away with their boxers because they have that relationship with the boxers. So them lads wouldn't be on that international team without the amateur culture. But you never see, when somebody comes back with an Olympic gold, or you never see the amateur coach even getting a mention. You know, and it's the amateur coaches that got them there. It's not the international coach, it's the amateur coaches that are getting them there.
And being there for them 7 days of the week, you know. As I say, not just a coach, a father figure. Because some of these kids might grow up without a father or a mother.
Everything to them. Father, mother, psychologist, everything going on. Like I say, like I just said earlier on, it's a relationship you have with them. And then even professional boxing, I've got good fuel lads there, and we've got it, and you know, I'm doing a bit with them. But there are already little diamonds that the amateur coaches have produced, you know what I mean? And all I'm doing is polishing them now at the end of the day. And because you're kind of in the limelight, they're going to go for world titles, and I'll get the credit for that. But you've got to get all the credit. 90% of the credit goes to the amateur coaches who's amateurs or kids and persevered in them all the way up, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So take your hat off to the amateur coaches, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think are the main ingredients for sustaining success in boxing? I think this is transferable across anything in life and business. What do you think are the main ingredients?
Commitment and dedication. You know, you get the most
discipline.
Discipline, yeah, 100%. I mean, without commitment, you have no discipline, you haven't got the commitment and dedication. And like I just say, some of the most talented boxers don't make it because they've not got that dedication and discipline. And some of the lads are. They're not the most talented going on in titles, you know.
Mm.
It's like everything.
Yeah, they're so basic that people forget to see them. They think it's the certain sports science. It's the drinks. It's the coach. It's all these things. But if you
they're
don't
all
have
the fancy things.
They're not the bells and whistles.
Fancy things, you know. It's like I see all these lads. They're running. They're using themselves, but they have the heart rate. They're checking the heart rate. They're checking this. They're putting on the skins for this, and they're doing the hydration. They're doing the cryotherapy. They're doing this. Oh, they're all the little 1%. But the main thing is turning up.
As you said, Katie, even on her deathbed, she turned up.
Yeah.
She turns up early.
Turning up, yeah.
You know
what I mean? All the little...
Going through niggles, you know, getting over that psychological barrier.
They're the go fastest right from the car. That's what they are, you know what I mean? They're all the bells and whistles. You know what I mean? You've got to have the car before you put the stripes on, you know?
Yeah. Four coat, no knickers.
That's it.
what's one of the best pieces or piece of wisdom, advice, anyone has ever given you in life?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Or if you want to give us any, that's cool too.
It's a tough one. You're putting me on the spot there. Wisdom. Let's come back on that one.
Yeah? We'll come back to that one, right? Let's talk about your evolution as a coach. You've gone from a tin can in Bray, which you'll be going back to, please God. Now you've got this sports science equipment, body composition, monitor, test or whatever.
Bells and whistles.
Bells, that's it. There you go, fast serves. Tell us about that. You know, because I've been watching you over the years as a coach, you know, and I see on social media you do a lot of reading and all that kind of stuff. You seem like you've evolved as a coach.
Yeah, I'm always educating myself, I think. You know, I think probably that was one of the most important things everyone said to me is you can't stand still, you've got to also educate yourself, you've got to always keep pushing forward, you know. And I'm always trying to educate myself, and like I say, I don't think there's any, I think you can learn off any coach, you know, the people that kind of get up on the high horses and think they're the best coach in the world, and you can't learn from anyone else. When I came back from the Olympic Games, the first thing I did was invite a Russian coach over from Russia. I got a Russian interpreter and did a seminar with him. You know, people were saying, "Oh, you're mad. You just won the Olympic Games." I want to improve. That was the first thing I did when I came back from the Olympic Games. Was fetch a Russian, professional boxer, and fetch him over. And did a seminar, 3-day seminar for me, the boxes in the code, and wrote it down, gave me a book, pushing me after, had to interpret it. That was the first thing, but you can't stop learning, you know?
Yeah, and it's brilliant that you say that. We just touched on that earlier about, you know, learning from your mistakes. Like, you were even learning from your success, you know, because obviously that was a difficult period. And you know, bring them over and learn even more from that.
In 2012, obviously I had Katie there and he had Adam Nolan. And Adam, unfortunately, got being in the quarter final, and I was always thinking, 2016. And Adam could win gold, he's got the experience now at the Olympic Games. Unfortunately, he qualified for 2016, Stephen Donnelly qualified. You've got to kind of keep stepping forward,
and
people will overtake it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nice lad, actually. I don't know. Remember when I walked in Bray, he was a guard there.
Sound
fella.
Sound.
Is he still boxing?
No, he finished. And he's his fifth national title, then I think
he retired. How much sports science do you use and old school methods? Solace on the floor approach and the sports science. Do you try to blend the two together?
Yeah, blend the two together. Every morning, all my lads send the HRV to me on the phone. So how do
you? Variability. Yeah, I like that.
I check that every morning. I check everybody's every morning because, everyone's periodized. I periodize everybody's plan up to the fights. You know, and everybody's on different plans. So, for instance, Gary Cullen sparring with someone, one of my other lads. It might be an easy spar this day for Gary Cullen. It might be a hell of a spar for whoever he's sparring. So the next day, Gary Cullen's HRV will still be grand.
Yeah.
And I might have had a big session planned the next day as well. And you're the lad who sparred him. It was such a hard spar for him. His HRV could have gone through the roof. So then the next day, yes, I have an easy day. So you've got the sports science is great for helping you plan everyone's in the sessions individual, because some sessions take more out of somebody else than it takes out of it. Another boxer, so then the next day it might have to be easy for him, but the next leg can keep going at that same intensity, you know.
Apps, that's a great show, and it looks at the nervous system response and the recovery. Really good. I like all that.
So, like, I probably say the next day I'd send you a man on a just a recovery run. I might go for a swim, I'd say you need to go for a massage, or I might need the day off, you know. But then the other leg can still keep going. That intensity.
And that's counterintuitive though, because they want to keep going. They're their own worst enemy, aren't they?
So you've got a bit of
rest is failure.
This is it, yeah. But rest is important, the most important thing, you know. And again, I'm not a believer in overtraining.
No.
I think it's underresting. You know, nobody can overtrain, you just underrest. That's my philosophy on that.
Yeah.
You don't overtrain, you underrest. You know, your sleep's not right, or you just, you know, you're not looking at your HIV, you are doing training on the side. It's under resting, it's not overtraining.
Brilliant.
Everything's under resting.
And I'd say that's easy for you then as a coach to go to them and say, look, this is the stats are saying, just calm yourself down
take a rest, you know.
And I'm sure they feel it then when they come back.
They come back and they come back great, you know, and they're going, and then the next day they come back, and, or 2 days later they come back in the flying. You know, sometimes it might take 2 or 3 days, because if you do, like I say, I don't believe in overtraining, but if you get into that overtraining place where your HIV is red for a week, you can be out for 3-4 months.
Mm.
Because you're better off undertrained, you know, going in a little, not at your top and then overtraining, because once you're overtrained, you can't pull anything out of the back. But with undertraining, with your heart, you'll always drive yourself a little bit more. You know?
Ah, yeah, because people look at the VO2 max, you know, and I talked to another Paralympian about this. You know, some people have a VO2 max, say 55, some have of, say, 45, but the 45 can outdo the 55 when it comes to performance on the day.
Yeah, it's about this.
Yeah, because it goes back to the central governance theory that Tim Noakes talked about, that your mind controls, not the body.
Yeah.
And it'll overdo it.
Yeah, it's again. So, like you just say, the mind controls your heart. You've got to want it. You're not just willing it at the end. It's the
world. Turning up when you're sick.
Yeah. And then when you're getting caught, and you know the fight's slipping away from you, knackered, getting that extra 5-10% out of your body. I always say to my lads when they're wrecked, I might guarantee you now, if I set a Rottweiler after you, you wouldn't run. You would run. Your body, you'd do something. Fight or flight, you would move, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're not, your mind is telling you you're tired most of the time, you know.
Yeah.
So you're not physically tired, it's your mind, you know.
What courses are training? I know you do run them out here, a few, you do the boxing coach and you do a few other strength. What courses or training have you done that has been beneficial to you as a coach?
I did a great course with, I don't know if you know him, Joel Jamieson.
Who?
Joel Jamieson.
Yeah, it's great.
8weeksout.com is strength and
conditioning. He's
absolutely brilliant. He's brilliant with the HRV. He's brilliant about loadings, about thresholds. He's absolutely brilliant. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's been one of the best people I've done a car with. I've done all the strength and conditioning courses. Seminars with like some Mike Wilde as well, functional training.
Yeah, I like Mike Wilde. I read a lot of his books.
Yeah.
You can transfer his coaching right across
to everything.
All sports. I used to like him as a soccer coach.
Yeah. I'm always educating myself. I'm always going on classes. I've got a great class, precision nutrition class there as well.
I like them. Yeah,
very good as well. You know, you've got to keep educating yourself.
And you read a lot as well, don't you?
I read, 4 or 5 books at the moment. Really, you know,
loads of books going around.
I go to bed listening to podcasts all the time as well. You know, so.
I listened to your one with Paddy Barnes actually. Your interview you done with Paddy Barnes. Paddy Hewlett. JC can talk.
Paddy, nice man.
He says to me, that, fuck. The girls in the job slag me about talking so much. I says, I think I met me match with some of the talks.
Now, I believe a lot as well in this biohacking, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I go out with the lads, you know, you try and take a bit, after he had taken the insulin levels as well, you know, and seeing if the sugar levels had gone up and things like that. You know. Yeah. I love all that biohacking as well. You know,
doesn't so. It? Jesus, you're there.
It's all that kind of stuff.
You have a finger in lots of different places.
Yeah, like say, checking the blood pressure after training. And
yeah.
Hydration levels. I'm into all that. You know,
beetroot juice. There's great science at that moment for lowering, for recovery and low blood pressure.
I think I got a lot because I took a heart attack last year.
Did you?
So, I got a stent put. So after that, then I got more and more into it. You know that kind of way. You know, so
deadly. What piece of advice would you give to young coaches or somebody getting into business now? Young coaches even getting into boxing or personal training or life coaching, or what advice would you say to them?
Don't stop educating yourself. Everything's education, you know. Don't think because you've passed this course, this A, B, and C course, or this course, that you know everything. The same in the business, you know, you never know everything. You've got and things are evolving all the time. Like you say, sports science is evolving all the time. It's getting better and better all the time. And I can say that you can get too involved in the sports science of it as well, you know. The theory end of it doesn't always work. A few lads have come out of these college, university, and they've got these strength and conditioning, they've done the masters and this and the masters and that. This all sounds great in theory, it doesn't actually work though a lot of the time, you know. In boxing, you get your strength and conditioning. I do the strength and conditioning with my lads as well. I don't have a strength and conditioning coaching because it's not separate to boxing. It's only an addition to your boxing, you know. Sometimes they take a new level, they separate to the boxing and they're killing them in the strength in the gym. It's only an addition to you. It's only, a strength and conditioning is more. It's more prehab.
100%. I would think so as well. I would be a big player. Like football, like tennis, like anything, you have to be match fit.
Yeah.
Do what makes you fit for the ring.
Yeah, it's not quite being injured. You might be the best boxer in the world, but if you're injured and you can't fight, then what's the point? Best football in the world. It's no use if you're on the bench injured. Yeah. And you're injured because you've overtrained or you've got injured through your strength and conditioning.
And there's a lot of load go on. You know, there's a lot of biomechanical load goes into strength and conditioning.
Yeah, and it affects it, especially if you're lifting heavier. Your nervous system gets affected as well.
100%. So we always say get fit in the ring and then use the others as an add-on. Like to go fast stripes.
That's it, yeah. I've never boxed or put my lads into a fight and they just come out and say, that lad's crap, he's too strong. You can never get too strong as well. So, you know, you've got to use the strength and conditioning as well. But there's times and places to use it, you know, because I don't think you can ever be too strong as well, you know. And I think when you get to the top level, everybody's technically the same. There's very little difference in the technical, but whoever wins is usually the strongest person.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone's roughly the technically the same, especially in amateur boxing, everybody's at international level. Everyone's technical, they're all brilliant. It's the stronger one wins then, you know what I mean? If you're two people technically the same, obviously the stronger man will win. I think you can't neglect the strength as well, you know.
Yeah, a lot of emphasis gets put on it though, doesn't it? Strength condition.
So much emphasis.
Yeah, I see it all the time. It's a buzzword. S&C.
My lads don't do strength and conditioning. They do it twice a week. Mm. Like I say, it's got
prehab. Like you said, I think.
There's too much emphasis put on it.
So something else to sell.
That's it. It can be a little bit overrated, but it's still like
it's back to what you said earlier, Pete. It's the 1 or 2%, it's the 3%. The other stuff is the turning up every fucking day.
Yeah,
attitude.
Lift weights all the day, they can say, and some of them, strength and conditioning coaches, they've got all these theories, but you won't be a good snooker player by lifting weights or running around the snooker table, really, at the end of the day. And that's kind of what I look at.
That's a great show.
You can lift weights all day as well, but it's not going to make
a better boxer.
It'll make a stronger boxer, but technically it's not going to make you any better.
lifting weights not going to give you the attitude for getting out of bed in a pissy, rainy day.
Well, unless again, what you just said, it's like half that discipline when it's rushing around, especially in this country and it's been freezing, but you still have to get on the train.
Middle of fucking October, it's freezing, piss and rain, and you can on a bus, two buses.
Yeah, no, look, I've got Tony. Look, they have three lads up there driving down from Belfast every day to train.
Jesus.
That's commitment. That's commitment. Then the finish train back, that's commitment.
It's class, isn't it?
It's on the green, gets the Lewis and two Lewis's to get in, you know what I mean? So, and the lads that live the closest are usually the latest thing.
Ah, the fuckers. Come here.
Not saying much, Luke.
Yeah, Luke Keller, by the way. Look, you got shot in a boxing club. You're back in a boxing club. Why?
Well, first I at the time when I got shot, I knew I wasn't the target, you know, and some fool comes in, the community club starts shooting around for what reason we still don't know, but I only got shot because I ran and jumped on him. If I just, like I said before, if I just stayed where I was and didn't give me the phone, I would have got shot, you know what I mean? But it was my club, my people in the Queen Zone. It's fight or flight in it at the end of the day. But in the end, not going to let someone come in and shoot the club up, you know?
Yeah.
So I ended up running across and then getting shot myself. I'm back in a spot. I love boxing, you know? And if somebody came in here today and started shooting around, I'd do the same. But at the end of the day, you know what I mean? You're not always in your right to come into a public place. No matter what grievance he has with anyone or what grievance anyone has, in a coward's way, you know, there's a boxing ring there. The grievance with someone, come in and box them. Stake is a boxing club, you know. So, you know, if you're a problem, come in and box them. It's just the best way. Throw away the guns and knives, on the gloves.
Yeah. What shines true to me about it, Pete, is your love for the sport, your love for coaching, your love for learning. There's a lot of love there that outshines the fear. My question probably was angle at, I'd be very fearful after going back to something that's shot, but what's shining through from this interview I'm sitting talking to is that you fucking love the sport, you love learning, you know, that was just an event.
Yeah, look, I was back in the club 2 weeks afterwards with a bloody frame on my arm as well.
RoboCop.
Yeah, like RoboCop. He only came off my arm 8 weeks ago. No. You know, I love the sport, and personally, as a man, as a human being, I won't get intimidated anyway. If you know what I mean? You're not going to live your life, you're going to get intimidated by anything, you know what I mean? On the day, if I'd hit and not done anything, myself I'd have died anyway, you know? Do you know what I mean? I would have died, I would have felt like a coward anyway, I would have died anyway.
Your bravery, I admire your love and passion for such a sport.
Yeah, it's just it's my club and the people, and they're my boxers and they're my responsibility. The people who are in the club, it was my responsibility as well.
I really hope you get back there.
It's wrong that everyone, I've been punished, the club's been closed, and everyone else who went to the club's been punished, you know. And at the end of the day, I do no wrong, and no one else in the club did any wrong, you know. I mean, the only person that should be getting punished is the person that came under the bloody gun.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know.
Yeah. Wow. What's the one thing you'd like people to take away from this interview after listening to you?
Well, I think, after what happened with myself and Kate, and then what happened in the boxing club, then there was a lot of negative press. There was a lot of negative press about me, you know, I just love boxing, you know, at the end of the day, I think I'm an easy enough for a person, you know what I mean? But I love boxing, you know, once I become a friend of someone,
I'm a boxer,
I'd be 100%, you know.
Do you know what? The Katie Taylor stuff, the shooting, I just think boxing is sometimes an easy target, Pete. you know, because of the class, you know, working class people, because of the area. Like, the stuff that goes on in middle class clubs, you can talk about rugby, you can talk about soccer. The stuff that goes on is despicable. You never hear about it, you know what I mean? There has to be a big, you know, it has to be a fucking baddie in something. It's not fair.
Boxing gets so much bad press.
I see it in my community, the good that's been done in boxing, like Dunor Boxing Club, Rialto, Crumlin, Drimna, fucking pillars of the community.
Yeah, that's right. And even like amateur boxing, like I say, amateur boxing is brilliant, like they are the pillars of every community. And then you go on against it's a professional boxing club, and they say, ah, oh, this and that. Like, everyone knows professional boxing is, you know, going over the years, it's got a bad rep. But all these lads, amateur boxers, they're all representing the country from one. Now they're trying to make a living, and they get such bad professional boxers, they're this and that, and all run by mobs, you know. These lads are all trying to make a living now after representing the country for years and years. And again, another thing about amateur boxing, and this is about the Amateur Boxing Association, you get lads who represented the country for years, and like, for instance, Kenny Egan and Davey Oliver Joyce are there, and the Finnish amateur boxing, should be running testimonials for these lads. Yeah, every other sport runs testimonials, football team, a lad finishes playing for you, internationally. They did testimonial for him to get a few bob. Like Davey Oliver turned professional at 2 years of age. His best years have gone by as an amateur boxer. He's trying to earn a few bob. Sure, they should do testimonials for him. Because when you're boxing on a night performance team, you don't have a chance to learn a trade. You don't have a chance to do anything because you're full time, you're in there training full time.
And then
once you stop, that's it. What are you doing? Outputting edges or sweeping ropes, because you know that.
Same
Paul, I actually remember with Paul, I think it's Paul Butterman. He won, was it in the European gold or European silver, was it? A gold and a silver, Paul did. Finished boxing, that was it. This, what he was doing, I think he was working for a council or something. Like, there's no jobs for him, there's no testimonials for him, and they don't look after the boxers at all, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you can, when you're an international boxer, you're training like a professional, you're training twice a day, within there, in the stadium, every day, you can't do anything else.
Look at the GAA lads, they're the same, but they get well looked after.
They get well looked after, amateur boxers don't.
I want to touch on something you just said there about like boxers, and he's talking about mobsters and gangsters running it. Look at the FAI. Look at GAA. Every hand has mobsters and they're running it, but it's okay to just look down on boxers. Do you know what I mean?
I know,
I find that hard to stomach sometimes. You know, people think that the FAI are not run by mobsters and gangsters. People are flooding money over into their pockets, but they turn their nose up. All boxers are being run by gangsters and drug dealers. It's just
I've got lads. And with management companies there, and if it wasn't for the management companies, they wouldn't be able to the positions they're in, you know.
100%. I think it's been a great benefit to the sport of Ireland boxing. The money it's invested.
100%. You know, and regardless of where you see up, and it changes these lives. Changes their lives, you know. Because without them, they won't be in the positions they were. Luke won't be fighting for the world title. Dave Valley won't be fighting for the world defense. You know, these lads deserve it. They're all box for the country. You know what I mean? They sacrifice their lives for the country. Now they've got to prepare themselves financially for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, 100%.
Everyone has a right to do that.
And I walk in Brian and Johanna. I interviewed Conor McGregor's doctor, Jules Dalby. You know, and I think that boxers are not paid enough or financially rewarded enough for the sacrifice, because I work in brain injury, I see the daily impacts of brain injury and the dangers that boxers put themselves through, whether it be amateur or professional. Do you agree with that?
100%. You know, and everybody thinks boxers are making a fortune. I've got lads boxing for, I just realised boxing is a damage. They have to pay $2,500 before they even get in the ring to pay for their opponents, pay for this, and through selling tickets as well. And they're from Dublin, and now they're boxing in Belfast. So you have to sell $2,500 worth of tickets before they make a penny themselves.
Crazy.
That's actually a hardship. You know, you're promoting the fight yourself, the stress of selling tickets. I mean, I don't know, tickets, I don't know what price tickets are, probably €40 each, 2,500 euros, so 60 tickets you've got to sell before you even start making any money yourself. Like 60 tickets, that's enough for people to sell. And the boxing on the 1st of February and selling 60 tickets just after Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, people don't have the money as well.
And once people see you on telly, they think you're making money.
Making money,
the promoters make money.
Promoters make money, big money as well, but boxers, unless the top 1% of boxers make money. Top 1% of boxers make money, the rest can't make money.
And the thing about it is, and I know this from dealing with the young kids, you know more, they're not in it for the money.
Not at all.
They're in it for the love of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, and then look as well, what we say, we just say about brain damage and trauma. People make a few bob outside the top 1% of the journeymen. But the journeymen are in there, it's such to get better, to fetch on an up and coming fighter a little bit. But every time they're in there on a lose-lose. Like, and they're taking punishment. They've got to try surviving the four rounds, because if they get knocked out, they're out of boxing. They miss, they're out boxing for a month. And these lads are fighting every 2 weeks. So they're there trying to survive. They've got to feed the families, you know, and trying to get the money as a journeyman. You probably get a couple of grand for a fight. And if they get knocked out, then they're out of boxing for 4 weeks, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they're doing everything to survive a fight, you know what I mean? And
I definitely think so. I think amateurs should be paid, you know. Fucking, it's just.
Yeah, amateur boxing as well. Now, look at them, they're taking the headgear off them. Like, so it's like professional boxing, you know, made for amateur boxers.
Headgear, no headgear, head contact is head contact.
Head contact is head contact, but with the headgear, there's a lot more facial damage, you know, with punch head, books and everything.
Mm.
And you know, you go away to a top amateur, goes away to the World Championships. They fight four or five times in 5-6 days, and a 3-round fight tempo is like, it's like 100 meters, whereas professional boxing, they're kind of more, the pace is slow, but they fight, they have four fights, they fight 15 rounds in 5 days, say.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, amateur boxing is not as bad as professional boxing. It's every bit as bad now, because there's no headgear on and work right out of these guys. You fight 3 rounds, you get caught, they patch you up, you get back out again the next day for another 3 rounds. It's hardship, you know, as well. And they make you wait the same day, at least with professional boxing, you've got the luxury of 24 hours before you step in after making weight as well, you know.
So do you do all your lads cut as well, their weight cut as well?
Yeah, all the weight.
All that as well?
Yeah.
Jesus. Some amount of attention to detail for each person, because each one is very specific.
In all fairness to my lads,
they all look like they're all in shape.
They're all in shape. They never get out of shape, and they're all experienced now. And they all know their own bodies. They all know what weight they should be, you know. And in all fairness, I don't check the weights now that much. I only up to the last 4 weeks to start checking the weights.
Yeah.
But I know they're all good.
You leave that up to them.
Yeah, so I can't manage what they eat. I'm with them maybe 3 hours a day. They're all 21 hours a day. They have to have discipline, what we're talking about.
They have to have
the discipline to stay away from the fridge. At the end of the day, you know what
I think
mean?
That might be the key to losing weight, is it?
Stay away from the fridge. It's not,
hard, is it?
You can't out train a bad diet, is what you're saying, you know what I mean?
Are them days gone now of big sloppy boxers and getting yourself out of shape? You know, no, I'm a slag, but I love them as a boxer. You know, the Ricky Hattons and Tyson Furies. And Tyson's a legend for the sport. I think them days are gone, haven't they?
Ricky Hattons' career could have been a lot longer.
He was a fantastic, I loved him.
Yeah, great fighter, but look, he spent most of his camps making weight.
Yeah.
Not boxing, you know. Yeah. And if you're having to use your camp making weight, then it's not a boxing camp, it's a slim man camp, you know what I mean? That's what it is, you know what I mean? So
yeah, preparing for the fight. But them days have moved away now, haven't they?
Everyone's more educated with food now, you know, and the nutrition animals were a lot more educated with the foods they're taking as well now. Boxers are educating themselves as well.
They've become more professional, haven't they themselves? Yeah. They have evolved as well.
And again, what you find as well, the lads, the least talented boxers are the ones that educate themselves the most as well, you know, they're the talented boxers, you know.
Yeah, I interviewed Steve Orman and he was telling me about this kid he's coaching, a small little kid, but he's lost a good few fights, maybe 3 or 4 maybe. He just keeps throwing it back up, And I was like, that's absolutely amazing. I love it. Like, yeah. some kids don't have resilience, you know. They're like, oh, I give up, I lost. But he just keeps turning up. And yeah. I watched him out there doing pull-ups and all. It's deadly, isn't it?
That's brilliant. They're the kids. He will achieve, that lad will achieve.
Yeah.
You know? My grandson now, we got to the final of the under-18s as well. And he was the same style. He lost a few fights. And he loves boxing. And training, you know, he's back to the fans and dating, he won the Leinster's, you only got beaten by Emmanuel Gallagher, and he's got to go, he won a big tournament there now in Lithuania, another one in Latvia, about gold medal, and again he started off slow as well, and sometimes with kids as well, it's about maturity, some kids mature faster than other kids, you know what I mean?
Cognitively and physically.
Yeah. These lads are sticking it out, come to the top at the end of the day. And just talking about weight, that was even Stephen Almond. It's his worst thing. He used to blow up between fights as well, you know what I mean?
I forgot how good of a boxer he was. I used to love him watching as a boxer. So before the interview, I went back, watched a few of his fights, the one with Derry Matthews and a few of them. He was a cracking boxer, wasn't he?
Cracking boxer as well, and great attitude as well. So determined as well. But I think as well, if he'd have been a little bit later on in the era I think if he'd have took up to the coaching thing, he actually says it himself, and he's coaching now, he says, geez, why did I do that? I think every boxer as well, I think you should do a little bit of coaching, because they educate them. I mean, when you're holding the pads as well, you can see the punches coming, it's the same as blocking and everything as well, you know. So I think it's good as well. Yeah. I try to encourage all my lads to do a little bit of coaching. I think it helps them, because
that's a great show, actually.
You know, you're teaching lads how to do things. Then you think, yeah, I don't do that. Do you know what I mean? And you educate yourself.
Lots of professionals say that if you want to get better at a task, start coaching. Because I started meditation course. I teach people meditation. As soon as I started teaching it, I became better and more absorbed in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than just doing it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas even myself, I was the most skillful boxer. I was always into the
fight. Like heavy champion, I heard.
Yeah, I was always a fighter. But now, because I'm coaching them, I'm demonstrating all the time. I'm actually boxing better than doing my legs as well than when I was boxing. Because now I'm not just a fighter, you know, you're showing angles. And you've got to be able to do it yourself.
Mm.
You've got to be able to demonstrate yourself correctly to show your boxers, you know. So if you've been doing that when you were boxing, you could have been a lot better.
As Steve Jobs says, it's easy looking back, joining the dots, you know.
Then you get this experience and you've got to try passing it on then to your own lads, you know, as well, you know.
Definitely. Pete, I'm mindful of the time. I have to say, this is one of the bucket list things to come and interview you. I'm a huge admirer of you and the work that you do for Irish boxing and boxing in general, and it's just deadly, and I wish you well.
Thanks,
your lads, the club, and you as a person.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. I really do, Pete.
Thank you.